Welcome to the I Create Daily podcast. I'm Leora Alderson.
And I'm Devani Alderson. We're your co-hosts on this journey of creativity and productivity.
I Create Daily is for artists in every genre of creating, from musicians to writers, crafters to inventors, bloggers to entrepreneurs. I Create Daily is a movement for creators serious about your art.
If you're into creating anything, this podcast is definitely for you. Thank you so much for joining us on this journey.
Main thing, it's like we've had so many times here where we've just been like something spontaneous will come up and it'll be like a comment that will lead to another comment and then the conversation just mushrooms. It's like, oh darn, we should have been recording that. So
you know, yeah, I feel you.
Yeah. And it's like at the same time, it's a fine line of trying not to make you or anyone else feel self-conscious, you know, because changes from this month can change in the spontaneity, but you're pretty good at, you know, you've got the gift of conversation and interaction. So I don't think it'll stymie anything from you, but it can.
Yeah. No, I feel you. The second you hit record, some people are like, anyway, you know, it's like, so, and it's like, no, just chill. It's cool. It's fine.
Exactly.
How have you guys been doing? You guys have been busy, huh?
Yeah, super busy. We created 4 versions of our 90-day journal, and we created
4?
Yeah, well, right.
Different colors and edits. And you have, you know, when you create the beta version and then you get the user feedback and then you're like, well, we're going to add colors anyway. We should just go ahead and make the edits because it's not like that much. It's easier to do it now than later.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the
edits, cool.
So the edits are like, it's like the journal is basically the same and the quotes per day, most days are the same. But on the day 7, so it's like, you know, it goes by the weeks, days and weeks for 90 days. And on day 7, it's where we've written like some kind of a coaching concept or, you know.
Like one of our longer form emails stuck into the page.
Yeah. And so for each journal, instead of having a duplication, we created a new day 7. So that was the main, and then a new quote for that day. So that was the main variation so that as people go through each, we created 4 different ones so that different colors, so that the quarters would be easy to identify if people wanted a different color per quarter kind of thing.
Yeah. That's so interesting. God, I'm fascinated by the whole process of that. Like, how's it been going for you guys, the actual rollout? And like, have you been hitting your sales goals and stuff? I like dived into it because I'm like, tell me everything.
I'm actually working on the Facebook ad side so that I can learn more about getting those selling. But what we've been doing in the meantime is the landing page is great. We have the variants. We've been working more on the technical landing page, getting that all set up. And we want to start ads before we got the product in.
Yeah.
We don't get like a bunch of sales and then like, well, we gotta buy.
And by product, she means the new ones,
the new
versions.
Journals, yeah.
So got it. We've updated our landing page, and we have them. They should actually be in. Well, 2 of them should actually be in tomorrow, and we still have 2 more to come in. So, as far as sales, it's not where we wanted it to be. It definitely didn't launch and didn't blast out the way we hoped it would for the first quarter, like in the beginning of January. However, you know, at the same time, it's like we're a new brand. Mm-hmm. We're still not yet recognized as a brand. There's so many other people competing for the market, you know, that time of year. And so I think it's just going to be, we're laying the foundation.
And we are structuring it so it's 90 days so that every night, instead of just like January 1st is our journal season, it's more just like every beginning of the quarter will be like the biggest hit, the biggest push for the marketing of it.
Yeah.
And also, wait, what were you saying? Saying something about the journal, the landing page.
It didn't launch as much in January as we wanted it to.
We also decided we were selling a digital version too, and we decided not to do that anymore just because
inflation
and all that stuff.
So we did get, so we got a large, a relative, like a bulk corporate sale. Which is fantastic.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, because then it's paid for the whole next order. And it's sort of like, aha, you know, like if we could get a few of those going, you know, because especially if they reorder, you know, for the next month and the next month, and then that will really get that wheel going nicely while we work on getting it out to the populace, to the, you know, the mainstream as well. Yeah. So
we've already created ad like targets, and one of them included managers of companies or like project managers within companies to be like, hey, if you want your team to stay on track with their goals and meet their, you know, deadlines and whatever. So that gave us that whole idea.
That's smart. Yeah, that's really smart.
So our thing has been, we're pretty good at creating content and products, but not still great at sales and campaign kind of marketing, just because it's like, well, it's just not our strength. It's not what we love to do. You know, you got to get it today and the sale ends. Yeah. And, you know, it's like the hoopla. It's like, it's more like we want to be on to the next thing.
Here.
Yeah. And,
you know, which isn't like totally smart.
Well, it depends, right? There's like all these different ways of doing it for all these different kinds of products and services. So it really depends.
Yeah. So, but what's been going on with you?
A lot. So my marketing side is growing a good bit. I wouldn't say like it's growing in a sustainable way, which has been the most nerve-wracking thing for me because, you know, I'm still a baby business owner. I started it 9 months ago. And so at this stage of growth, I'm very intent on making sure it's scalable and it's something that I can sustain. And so bringing on the right people for the right amount of time with the right skill set. So I literally was just at a lunch with a potential new hire. And I think he's going to be somebody that I bring onto my team. But it's just funny because I have to reconcile with these people. Like, I know you're only going to be doing like 5 to 10 hours of work for me a week, but you're a critical part of my business. And so I go through it as if I'm hiring you full time. But also the long-term vision is that I'll eventually be able to hire people on full time. And I want them to be the people who've been with me.
Yeah.
So it, you know, it's an interesting process and it's, I feel like every day is humbling. Every day I'm like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Let's see how this goes, you know? And so it's like, obviously I have my career experience, but nothing quite prepares you like building your own business and building your own brands. Like what you guys just said, you know? And I think it is these disappointments or these moments where things don't pan out like we think they're going to pan out that teach us the most, namely humility. And so that's been a lot where I'm getting clients that align really well with me and how I work. I'm really enjoying the work. And then Cultured Podcast, since the beginning of the year, I would say in the last month, just something happened where the local audience started catching on and people just started listening more. And I've started getting all of this feedback, all of it. It's been like very weird in the last month, especially. Awesome. So that's super exciting.
Yeah.
Cause my long-term vision is to really, obviously to monetize, to build the community that I want to build around Cultured Podcast. And I can only do that by monetizing it and by bringing on big sponsors. And I'm super particular about who those sponsors need to be because I'm like, you know, it's my Cultured crew. I'm super protective over it. And so that's been super exciting. And then on the other side, so I have three divisions. I have the marketing arm, which is Creative Powerhouse. I have Cultured Podcast. And then I have me as a speaker and a personal brand. And I have the Passion Planner, which is this big old, thick old thing. And it's a planner, but it's not like your guys's. So it doesn't hyper-focus on quarterly, which is really cool. This one is a yearly planner, but what it does is at the beginning and why I got it is it makes you like break out your passion roadmap and like really break out what you want to do based on your passions. And so I did that. And you guys have a similar concept. It's really like, it's focused, it's organizing, but it's also making sure that you're really invested in what you're doing.
Yeah, we actually looked at their site and model as one of the
Passion Planner.
Mm-hmm, when we were like, we were still in editing stage and we were still kind of deciding, is this 90 days? Is this a full year? How are we going to put all of it in one? Are we going to do like a half a year in one book? Like we are still kind of deciding. And so we definitely looked at their branding and stuff, and I've been stalking these journal brandings to what is our style, how is it,
and what's our value add, because there's so many now, and like even my process of finding the planner, I didn't actually seek it out. It was actually my contractor who wrote about it in a Cultured Podcast newsletter, because every newsletter opens with a personal message from me that my contractors write. Yeah. And I have to obviously approve and make sure. And she wrote about Passion Planner later last year. And I was like, what is this? And I looked it up and I was like, this is so cool. And I finally bought myself one. So the point being that it made me really break down all of my vision, because the past 8 months, 7 months before that had been me being like, I need to survive. my main focus and goal is to make my rent, you know? And I did that and then some. And so then it was time at the beginning of this year to be like, okay, what do I need to focus my energies on? Yes. And one of those things was really building out my writing my speaking practice, and start doing speaking engagements, capturing them, doing a speaking reel, and then applying to bigger ones. And those things have just been sort of manifesting on their own. And I'm super, like, I just got off the phone and I'm doing this workshop for Georgia Writers Association on Saturday. Nice. And then I was on the phone with them and she was like, we actually were talking about you to MC our annual awards meeting. Awesome. I know. And I was like, yay. Awesome. So that's another area of the phone. That's what I've got going on.
So, okay. So those are paid speaking gigs, right?
Yes. Yeah. So they're small, but you got to start somewhere, you know?
So tell us more about, you know, because you never know if we end up airing this, who might listen. Tell us more about what kind of speaking gigs you're looking to do. Like, what's your, back to your passion planner, what is your ideal speaking engagement kind of thing? Who do you like to serve and speak to?
I love talking about branding and marketing and storytelling. So I like breaking down this buzzword that is storytelling and digging into the roots of it. So the first presentation I gave this year, this workshop, was called The 5 W's of Brand Storytelling. And it breaks down the who, what, when, where. It really goes through the 5 W's. And it digs into, it goes pretty high level. So it talks about how we as Homo sapiens are built around our ability to tell fiction, to like conjure fiction. And I reference this book called Sapiens, and I reference Simon Sinek with, of course, Start With Why, that whole thing. The dots for people to see that this isn't just like a buzzword. This isn't just like a thing people talk about out of their butts. Like, this is a fundamental part of our humanity, and what makes us really powerful as creatures on Earth is our ability to create stories. Everything we do is built on that. So I break it down, and so I start high level, and then I really dig in, and I talk about what it means to be a brand and the parts of a brand. And then we do exercises, because, you know, in a recent interview, like in the last few months, I said I would never coach. And then I realized, I go back on that. I'm like, no, of course I would coach.
Never say never.
Never say never. Exactly. I said never, and I immediately was like, no, why did I say that? I think it's because I don't like the way coaching is done nowadays. I don't like that coaching has become a way for people to do less work and make more money. But the thing is, it's focused on the profit. It's not focused on the people you're coaching, in my opinion. And so with every workshop I give, this sounds very salesy, but it's really, truly, I have to remind myself, and I talk to the workshop organizers every single time, being like, this is how I've broken this down. Now, you know your target audience, you know the people coming, are they going to benefit from this? If not, I need to adjust it, because I need them walking away with at least one thing they've developed from my workshop that they can actionably implement directly from the workshop. And I think that's, you know, I've actually had potential clients come to me and say, you know, I did Marie Forleo or something.
Oh, yeah.
I've done her workshop, but I walked away and it was really enlightening, but I don't know how to do any of this stuff. And I still don't know how to apply it. And so I think a sense of honesty with my speaking engagements is really important when I'm talking about marketing, you know, a sense of like, this is how my process is, but you have to consider that I have 20 years of writing experience and 10 years of marketing experience. Mm-hmm. So we're going to walk through it together so you kind of get how my mind works. If you still need help, I can consult with you and I can actually do it for you.
Right.
Well, that was a really long answer, but.
We're having a conversation. That's great. It's like Devani likes to serve her clients by, like, she will do consultations for those who aren't sure what they need or what they want. And she'll do like a 1 hour consultation. She offers an initial free 15 to 30 minute mm-hmm. consultation to see if it's like a fit.
Yeah, that's great.
The ideal scenario would be if she wants to show them what to do so they can do it themselves. And then if they end up wanting someone else to do it or wanting her to do it, then her company can do the implementation. Mm-hmm. And we're at that place where, you know, so many small entrepreneurs, it's been, you know, like inconceivable to consider budgeting any money to pay anyone to do your social media, especially in the beginning of learning about, you know, like most small business owners and entrepreneurs really don't even budget for advertising. And so therefore they don't, which, you know, the social media budget falls within advertising.
Oh yeah.
And yet it's essentially, it's the lifeblood now, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. in business, because it's becoming an increasingly noisy world in the realm of marketing. And you can have the best product in the world, as you know, but if you don't have the right slogan, the right story, or the right reach, then, you know, no one's going to find you. It's equivalent to building your business on some back alley, you know, versus a big busy street. You know, you have to help people find you. So as you were talking, I was thinking that as a speaker, I could easily imagine you serving large corporation marketing departments, talking about, in particular, because they are increasingly looking to reach a personal level. Mm-hmm. In other words, how can we, as this mega monolithic corporation, speak to the story of humanity? You
know, oh yeah.
That's our customers. And so that's where a smaller entrepreneur, and especially one built around culture with diversity as well, you know, you could speak to that, whether or not it would be your ideal audience, I'm not sure. I could see where you could speak to entrepreneurs, the small business owners, as mm-hmm. well as creatives, which is your specialty through the Culture Podcast, you know, artists, creatives, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing, relative to how to reach the audience through their art and with their art.
Yeah. So I think that's a great point also, because I think the corporate thing, especially because my whole culture of my team is built on humanity and the acceptance finally that business is human. And so when people are like, it's just business, you know, business is business, it's not personal. I'm like, that's BS. Business only exists because a group of people agree it does. You know, that's the concept of shared imagination, is this idea that this Coca-Cola only exists as a corporation because thousands of people agree it does. And if none of those people agree that that is a company, it doesn't exist. And on top of it, the people who run it are people, they're humans. As of right now, Coca-Cola is not run by robots yet.
So, on the other hand,
yeah. There are some that are run by robots. You know, this concept of seeing everything you do as a human endeavor that impacts humans is also part of this new era of corporate social responsibility that's super important. And so even in my presentations, when I'm talking about what makes up a brand, one of the pillars that I put is social responsibility. That makes up a brand too. It's not just narrative and identity and all these different things. It's not just strategy. It's also, how do you impact the world around you in a way that's not fluffy and in a way that doesn't try to make up for blunders that you're making or for the negative that you bring to the world? It's not about just balancing. It's about doing good and letting good outweigh. So there's, you know, and it's not like I step on a soapbox or anything, but it is something that I want to reiterate to people. And that's a very valuable point to make in corporations. And most of my career has been in corporate America. I spent 8 years in super corporate environments. I worked for a 15,000 employee utility company, and it was, talk about a monolith. Like, that thing was, whew, like I did marketing just for the HR department. I did internal communications just for one department within that company because of how big it was. So there is, I think that's a great point, Leora. There's like a lot to talk about when it comes to even just marketing departments at corporations.
Yeah.
And having the internal marketing, like you were saying with the HR, the internal marketing and brand and story match the external story. Because I'm sure there's a lot of companies who they might have this great external facing story. And then internally, it's like, oh, well, it's a mess around here. And
most of them. Most of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, like most massive corporate, well, maybe not most, that's anecdotal, but like a lot of massive corporations don't know how to leverage the opportunity for frontline advocates that their employees are. So if you respect your employees, if you communicate transparently with them and clearly with them, and you show them the respect of telling them first, they become these invaluable advocates for your organization.
Yeah, definitely.
You always get back, I always remember the Zappos story, at least when it first started. I don't know if it's still like that, but it just, the stories about the internal community they created with the business itself, which, and then it translated so naturally. It wasn't like we're forcing this marketing PR stuff because we have to so that people are happy. It was like this very natural, you're a happy person and you really enjoy your work, and that's why I'm having a good customer experience.
Exactly. That's a great example.
So have you put your, or do you plan to do any marketing if you're speaking to the corporations, and to like, how are you marketing that?
Yeah, so I'm right now building my my portfolio of speaking engagements, and so I will by this weekend have done two. I might be emceeing the other one in June. My goal is to do one a month, but you know, I have a lot of other things going on, but that definitely is my goal, and I'm trying to. And I have applied to a couple other, like I've applied to speak at Podcast Movement. So fingers crossed, because I think that would be amazing. Yeah, that would be amazing. Yeah, cool. I have a spreadsheet that one of my contractors put together for me of actual speaking engagement opportunities.
Good.
I'm reaching out to those, and they're mostly conferences. I think reaching out to corporations is a really good idea, and I hadn't even thought about that yet. Like, I was so focused on finding these events surrounding the topics that I focus on, which are, you know, my niche areas of interest are arts and culture, podcasting, and then marketing in general. But there's so many opportunities to speak to writing. So the workshop I'm doing on Saturday is called Writer's Guide to Survival. And it's talking about, as a writer, you should look at yourself as a brand and as a business owner. And you should take your writing and your craft very seriously. And this is how you do that.
Yeah. So do you think that you would do some Facebook advertising once you got your portfolio? Where do you already have your sizzle reel on your speaking?
No, I'm building it.
So once you get that, you know, but I mean, it would be interesting to, like, Gary Vaynerchuk talks about targeting Facebook ads by things like, let's say that you wanted to contact, like, I don't know who in corporate normally does the speaking engagement hiring. You know, I'm guessing there's some kind of a leadership and training department that might do that. And so it would be something like, does your VP of training know about this? You know, if not, you know, you'll want to know. So that ad would be targeting employees of XYZ company, and in particular employees maybe even marketing, maybe in advertising, maybe in training, that kind of thing. In other words, you can get uber niche down into who you're trying to reach, so that, you know, you don't need, how many do you need? You don't need to reach masses to sell your speaking. You need to target employees of that corporation or those corporations that are within certain titles.
And what's really cool too is you have an opportunity in doing that to bring like all these sort of low budget entrepreneurial ideas that are really solid ideas for marketing, like bootstrapped ideas of marketing, into a corporation. Because you have your foot in podcasting and in storytelling and in small business and a background in writing, like, you have like a really good like career resume built up, where because you have all these skills, you can speak to each one and how a corporation can do all of that. So a corporation could find like two people in their marketing department who really love to riff on ideas or talk about things. And that could be a podcast that that company has that then reaches a specific demographic that they want to reach. And I mean, like you were saying, Coca-Cola as an example, it's run by humans and their whole thing is happiness. Well, if they did a podcast featuring stories about random acts of happiness, like mm-hmm. that could be a thing that people, a media piece that people yeah. would want to listen to.
That's a great idea.
And yeah. and just bringing all those ideas that we use as small business owners because we have to, because we can't do the TV things, we can't do the spend $1 million yeah. on Super Bowl thing, but it's just smart for corporate.
Totally. I actually work with two different podcast production businesses who do this and who like reach out to big corporations and create branded podcasts. And it's, that's really where the money is. Like that's really where you can target audiences in a totally different way as a brand. And it's proven because podcasts are already showing to be the holy grail for advertisers. Yeah. It's just the podcasters and the podcasts themselves, it's really hard to really break in without a massive budget. So that's where getting the budget of a major corporation and building them a podcast that's relevant, especially if you have the background for it, super helpful. And I do have something that I can't really talk about that I am working through that has a little bit to do with that.
Nice.
But that won't, that probably won't show its head for the next, I don't know, if I'm lucky, a year.
Can we pause the recording and she can tell us and then we can start the recording? Or can you like not talk about it, not talk about it?
I can't talk about it at all. It's so in the early stages and I can't disclose with anyone.
No, that's totally understandable. But I mean, so one of the things that you were talking that came to mind is the concept of, you know, those fantastic commercials that everyone loves to share mm-hmm. By an insurance company about people doing nice deeds.
Yes.
Somebody helping. I don't even remember. Sorry. I don't even remember the name of the company because there's probably been more than one. But insurance companies, you know, have so many stories, you know, and there are other companies like that have so many stories. And so mm-hmm. to be able to share stories of people really being helped and stories of kindness, that's a great idea. Yeah. And so if someone is interested in like loves to do podcasting type of thing, but I mean, hasn't done it on their own and feel like overwhelmed about what they would talk about just on their own, they could totally
yeah
somebody else. That's a
and totally podcast. Yeah, and one of the podcast production companies I work with, they so one of the owners is also a podcaster and a 30-year radio news veteran, and so he is the talent that you can also hire as your host. But then for instance, he works with me, so if they'd rather a female voice, he could easily just tap me to be the host, you know. So there's all these opportunities. What's especially cool about podcasting, this was a shocker to him, to a few of my other male colleagues who I work with all the time, is that, you know, we kind of well, maybe we's too many people, because I was like, just you wait, guys. But like, we're like, your audience is going to be female. And I was like, for the Cultured Podcast. And I was like, I think you're boxing me in there. I think you're going to see that that's not going to be the case. And my audience is mostly male. And so what's interesting about podcasting is that women are starting to reach larger and broader audiences as hosts, which is typically not the case in other mainstream media, other than like the written word. But even then, it's dominated by men. But the fact that 60 or to 70% of my audience is men is really, really interesting.
It is very interesting.
I have a question about podcast stats. I'm new to podcast stats and I don't know the best way to get them. We're using Mark Asquith's podcast website thing for a lot of our, his company for a lot of our hosting and this website and all that stuff. And it comes with some basic analytics,
mm-hmm.
like downloads per day, downloads per, you know, however you want to do it, by city, by state and all that. But there's not like, what do you use for your analytics?
So I host my podcast on Libsyn. By far, so glad I did it. I highly recommend people not host on SoundCloud. Like, it's shocking to me how many people host on SoundCloud. So if this does end up releasing this recording, like I'm imploring people to not do that. And I'm sorry, SoundCloud, I love you, but it's just not set up for podcasting. And the analytics that you get are so much deeper in a platform that's set up for podcasting. So I use Libsyn, which has about the same. And you know, this is kind of like the conversation that's been going on for a while, is like how disappointing it is that there aren't more analytics out there. And so you guys can see me, right?
Yeah.
So iTunes just recently rolled out some better analytics. And that, I think the most helpful part of those analytics is consumption, percent consumption, which is really interesting because I've read a ton of articles with people saying like the same thing. We're all starting to see the beauty of podcasting is that people stick around for the whole episode.
Yeah.
So, you know, our consumption numbers are like mine are 85% plus of an episode. And that's amazing. I mean, you're talking for advertiser implications, you're talking about, I mean, pre-roll and mid-roll being just as prime as we thought they were. Yeah. And people are listening to the whole episode. So that's really cool. So you can find some analytics on iTunes, as long as your podcast is registered, which it is. So you can go through, have you gone through the backend portal?
A little bit.
iTunes Connect. Okay. So go through there, you'll see the stats. And then other than that, just whatever stats your host provides, your hosting platform.
Sounds good. This goes back to the earlier conversation on speaking. You know, in fact, I think you introduced us, or vice versa. Actually, Tayo Robson introduced us to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Originally, and he does diversity training and speaking, and that's his goal. It just
occurred
to me that like you guys have a similar interest in that. Had you thought about collaborating and taking a joint presentation to corporations?
I think that's a great idea. he does already have a Colombian business partner.
Okay.
So I'd be stepping on some toes being another Colombian co-presenter, but I think that's a great idea. And you know, when we met up in New York, we met in person and we were talking a lot about how we have very shared visions in terms of opening up culture. You know, I have the hashtag culture for all, and he does that too. And he focuses more on diversity of people. I focus on diversity of self-expression. So there's a lot of overlap there, because when you honor the diversity of people, then you can more clearly see and appreciate how those diverse peoples express themselves in art forms or whatever. So I think that's a good idea. I'll have to give Tayo a shout.
Yeah, partner. So that's, you know, but yeah, you just never know what might be, especially in a corporation, larger corporation, where you potentially a larger reach of, you know, employees that need to be served, training people on in different locations. You never know. So one of the things you mentioned.
Aren't you part Argentinian too, though?
Yeah. Yeah.
Argentinian. You could have a Colombian. You could really just go heavy on. I'm really more part Argentinian. Sorry, Mom.
Listen, them is fighting words. My mom would be like, "You said what?"
No.
Because we were, you know, it's funny. My dad was Argentinian. Good memory, and he really raised us. The immigrant mentality is assimilation. And so my dad, when he moved here with my mom, he was like, "I'm American. My daughters are American now," you know? And so he was very much about us being American, even though he was the most Argentinian man alive. Like, it was really funny. But my mom, so they were divorced, and she raised us for all intents and purposes. And she was like, "Nah, girls, you're Colombian." And so she raised us super Colombian. And it was like this big shitstorm when we got our Colombian passports. And he was like, "What?" And then it was like, "Why didn't you get your Argentinian passports?" We're like, "We thought we were American, Dad."
So are you a dual citizen with Colombia and America, USA? And
am I what?
You're a dual citizen, right?
Now? Mm-hmm, yeah.
So Colombia and USA. And
exactly.
Did you go ahead and get an Argentinian passport as well?
No, we never did. And I don't really see the point, honestly, just because we grew up part-time in Colombia and that's like where our family is. We don't really even talk to our Argentinian side, unfortunately. We went and lived there with my dad for a few months when I was like 12. And that was really cool and a special experience. And I understand why my favorite wine is Malbec. That's where it comes out. But, you know, my dad's dad was Syrian and his mom was Spanish, first generation Argentinian. And so we're actually from all over the place. So my mom was smart by coming in and being like, this is your culture and raising us in that environment. So we have like significant Colombian pride.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could still be like, okay, I know you have a Colombian parent.
Exactly.
But American, Argentinian, and a little bit of Syrian in there.
I am Argentinian.
Yeah. So I want to go back to one other thing too, when you were talking about demographics and male for the Culture Podcast. And are you familiar with Mike Dillard's Self-Made Man podcast?
No, wait, Self-Made Man. I feel like I am. There's so many that, because I also do for clients podcast pitching. So I'm looking at podcasts every day. I probably am, but let's just say no. Let's just say no.
So, well, Mike Dillard is an amazing internet entrepreneur. It has been for many years. He has a wide network of really top-notch people, and he is one himself. And it's funny, he was working on creating a physical product for the first time a couple years ago.
Gardening space.
In the gardening space, like helping
people. Oh, interesting.
Healthy food at home, because that was a passion that he had.
Especially city people who live in a city and can't really just have a backyard garden.
But
he
you know, spent a lot of time, a lot of money trying to bring this to market, and just turned out it was just going to be way too difficult and too expensive, even though they got the prototypes and everything. So he ended up partnering with a company, I think in California, who already had a similar kind of concept going. And so he's now on their board. But in the
end, smart.
He created sort of like the hobby podcast, Self-Made Man. And it ended up doing so well and taking off that now it has become, he's just launched, in fact.
He's working on launching.
It launched like February 5th. I guess, or that was the pre-launch.
They're doing a pre-launch countdown to when the platform actually
Okay,
launches.
That's right. And right now, today it's Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's
Day. Happy Valentine's Day. I'm a Scrooge. I'm a Valentine's Grinch.
I saw your post about that. You're like, I hate this holiday, but I like this picture, so.
Exactly. I was like, this is cute.
I know.
Stupid Valentine's Day.
I'm not at all sentimental about this kind of thing.
But the rest of the week is National Discount Weird Shaped Chocolate Day.
That is a really good point, Devani. And you know what's funny? Like, just little interjection. I'm actually a super romantic person, and I love love. And I'm one of those people who needs romance porn every once in a while, so I need to, like, watch a romantic movie that's like, really bad. But I'm also a rebel. So the second you tell me that I have to, I'm like, what'd you just say to me? You're saying I have to love and this is how I should love? Absolutely not.
Exactly.
I know. That's why I hate it.
I told my husband from the beginning that, no, we don't need for anyone to tell us what day, and especially we don't want anyone to say that it really means that you love me if you give me XYZ gift. You know,
exactly. It's very commercialized, and I don't like that at all. So,
right. Definitely with you on that one, for sure.
Three marketers, for the record. Podcasters and marketers. FYI.
If I have a client who wants to launch something on V-Day, great. Awesome. Perfect. But for me personally, I tell all of my potential boyfriends, my partners. I was in a relationship for 6.5 years, and I was just like, can we just skip it? Can we just like not? Can we just wear black? Is that cool?
Black is the new black, and until they invent a darker color,
then it's still black, unless they invent black hole black.
Right, that's so funny. This morning, so I got a note from my husband this morning on Skype, and he's, by the way, like, you know, in the next room, but he says, hey, sweetheart, I know it's been commercialized, but a day essentially dedicated to love and the expression thereof is fine by me. So I'll not let it go by without turning my heart toward you and saying, I love you. I love us being together, and I love what we've created here and continue to create. So it's like, I said, okay. You know, like, I agree. A day.
Oh, will you guys be my Valentine?
See, a day day dedicated to love. Okay, I can do that as long as, like you said, we choose, you know, to say, and no one's going to guilt you into it at all. So definitely.
But that is beautiful. And I'm telling you, I am a sucker for love. So I was like,
Yeah, me too.
So cute.
So, but back to the Mike Dillard and the Self-Made Man podcast. So they're launching this whole community thing. The Self-Made Man podcast is taken off, and the concept in particular is taken off so much that it's growing into like an entire, his goal now is to make it an educational platform, like the number one educational platform for entrepreneurs. But back to the demographics, which is what originally made me think of it, is he has a tremendous amount of women. It's Self-Made Man, and yet he has women listeners as well as women audience. And
but it makes sense though, because it's like women want to be surrounded by men who are self-made and really like owning it and stuff. And so it's especially like women who are themselves either self-made or self-making, or you know, on that mindset. And so it's like, hey, dude, you should listen to this.
Yeah. You know what I think is happening? I think we're starting to realize that good content is good content. And as long as it's not tinged with, or it doesn't actually purposely focus on femininity or masculinity in particular. And I use those terms because it's not really about gender, because there are very masculine women and very feminine men who have, I use femininity and masculinity a lot, especially when talking about marketing and content and communication, even personal communication. I think what's happening is as women are empowered and given equality and equity in our world, we're starting to see that these messages, this really good quality content isn't about, well, this reaches men and this reaches women. It's just about, it reaches an entrepreneurial mindset. It reaches a arts and culture lover who's really interested in self-expression. It reaches an audience who really wants to know more about diversity in the world. You know, it reaches creators, whoever they are. So I think actually this movement that we're seeing in society of moving away from categorizing people by gender is, there's something to that. Yeah. Because gender isn't as important as the way you communicate, how you communicate, and what you want, you know, like really what drives your soul.
But it's, yeah, like you were saying, it's more about the energy you use.
Right.
How you use it in the world.
Yeah.
What you need to create. And yeah, I agree. We were just having this conversation the other day after interviewing somebody for our podcast and just talking about how, and I guess it's a good time to mention it, but we were interviewing a young lady who's also, we were interviewing Alexis Paris, and I was thinking about like, this is so awesome. You're like this young woman. You're out here. You're making moves.
I think she's like 21.
Yeah, 22.
Wow.
And she's like launching her career. She wrote a book about quitting college.
Speaking.
She's a speaker. Yeah, a dancer. And I was having this thought, and we're women podcasters. You're a woman podcaster. And then I was thinking like, wow, we're like women podcasters, and that's so cool. And then I was thinking like, we're just podcasters though.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, there's nothing different. Like, we're creating cool content that we want, and we're, like, there's all these movements and whatnot, and at the end of the day, we all just want to make the content we want to make and speak to the people who resonate with it. And
yeah.
And who we are speaks for itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I don't have to come out and make a statement and be like, I'm Indian born American adopted woman minority in America doing a podcast, like that's kind of apparent, you know. Like, I don't have to go.
No, I do think it's part of your story though, and so it's about owning your story for a purpose. So like Tayo does a great job of this, back to him, because he has a very specific story that is the drive behind what he does today, and so it's very relevant, you know. For me, on the other hand, my mixed background and my status as a first-gen American and all that doesn't have as much to do with what I do. I introduced myself in episode one, which is about Iceland, and it's just me talking, and I introduced myself, I broke down my background, but only when it's a part of a conversation with my my guest? Do I really bring that up? I mostly bring up, though, the story that I own is the fact that I was in theater for 10 years when I was little, and I was a trained singer, and I had voice lessons, and I've traveled around the world and been to cultural institutions. So that's the story that's relevant that I really pull out and talk about constantly. And then the other part, but I think to your point, there is a sense of openness now, and it's a sense of like, I am who I am. This is the content that I'm putting out there. And if you want to know anything about me and I feel comfortable sharing it, let's do it. Like,
yeah,
why not?
Yeah,
exactly.
And I'm still very private in many ways, but I balance it. So the things that I keep private, which I encourage people to do, I'm like, you don't have to share every piece of yourself.
Yeah.
You really don't.
Yeah. And I loved the, there were these series of commercials that after a while they kind of got annoying, but when they first came out, it was like, they were talking about, and I don't remember what company it was, I totally forget what they were advertising, so maybe terrible marketing, I don't know, but the point was they were talking about, they were taking little examples of like somebody sharing something online, and then somebody going overboard sharing stuff online. And so it was like sharing and then oversharing.
Yeah.
And there's this big distinction when we're content creators, especially content creators who are like super open about what we think about and what we want to share and what we want to talk about, because we're like, ideas, they're all everywhere, they're interesting, and I want to tell you everything. But then there's a part of it that's like, okay, well, you also want to speak a specific message to a specific person, and you don't want that clouded with all this other stuff that's interesting but maybe irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it also, like, you have to be true to who you are naturally. And so if you're somebody who naturally does like sharing a lot, I won't call it oversharing, because if it's natural to you, it's not oversharing, right? It's like, if you want to share your whole life, if you want to take 15 IG story videos a day and that feels natural to you, I'm actually like, wow, I'm jealous, because that's not me. Yeah. You know, I don't like putting my whole life on blast. And I really try, like, I will do little like IG stories. If I do something really dumb, like I yesterday did something super dumb, and I had a glass, like a Pyrex baking tray or whatever, dish, and I took it out of the oven. And usually what I do with like pans is when they're hot, I'll like wet them so that the stuff comes out of them. Well, I did that. I put cold water in it and it just like burst.
Glass.
I was fine and everything, but like the whole glass dish just burst in my face. And I was like, oh my God, that was so dumb. So I put it on IG stories and I was like, I feel stupid today. And that's the kind of stuff I really like sharing about my personal life. Other than that, it's about the things that I'm doing for my career and the thing, because that's a very much part of who I am in my life. So I usually take the approach of whatever I'm sharing, there's, let's say 90% of what I share, there's a very specific purpose behind why I'm sharing it. Yeah. And then 10% might be like, I met a cute cat today.
Yeah.
You know.
No. Cats. So, yeah. So like if 80 to 90% is substance, you know, versus fluff, you know, and random, because the other part, you know, we, Devani and I were talking about, we've talked about this a lot as well. And that's the concept of, you're going to turn on the Facebook Live or the Instagram story or whatever, you know, you also want to respect the people's time, mm-hmm. you know, that who are going to stop in and visit and try and make something of value to them. And yes, have the occasional chatting, you know, mm-hmm. but overall, have it be that if you've interrupted their day, that there's something of value, hopefully, for them.
Definitely for people who are building a business, like definitely for people who want to build a business, because like, you know, I think that's interesting. I think that's an interesting concept, because partially it's like, it's their choice, right? So if they log on and they look at your live feed and they don't like what they're seeing, they can choose to leave. Now, the repercussions are that once they leave and they don't see anything of value, they're probably not going to open up your next live thing. So it's I think it's less about respecting their time, in my opinion. It's more about, like, do you want them to come back that you're on?
Yeah.
And if you do, then do something that they might find a value. And so yes, that is like pandering to your audience, but that's what marketing is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pandering to your audience based on content that of people that you want to reach. Because it's like you're knowingly saying, hey, I know you're into creativity, which means I know that you'll find this particular topic fascinating, or
yeah,
culture, or you're into the arts. So obviously you're going to find this fascinating or interesting at some level.
Yeah.
And then sharing it. So it's sort of like, it's like giving people what they want in the parameter of, these are also my interests in what I'm trying to say.
Yes, I think that's a great point. Yeah, and I think to Leora's point, with your point involved, it's like, it is showing them respect by showing that you listen to them just as much as they listen to you, so you kind of get them.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
what I do a lot with the cultured crew, which is what I call my listeners, is I'm like very, I'm very devoted to my cultured crew. And I'm very, every time I get an email from them, the upcoming episode this Sunday, which is, so if this ever hits public, then that's February 18th, is the episode I'm talking about. It's episode 28. I open with inspiration every single week, whatever's inspiring me that week. And this week I open with this email that I got from a listener who was like, you make me realize that in this mad, crazy world, there are really special, spectacular people, and it inspires the crap out of me, and it makes my days better. And I was just like, you know, I was so happy. Yes, and I just like, God, when you're doing it with every ounce of passion that you have, why wouldn't you listen to the people who are listening to you? Why wouldn't you want to know more about them? And you know, you have this community at your fingertips, like, and I think a lot of people see it as overwhelming rather than this beautiful opportunity for community. And I think when you change your perspective, as with most things in life, once you change the way you look at something, it can change your business, it can change your life.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, well said. And one of the things that tying back to the comment about sharing personal stuff, mm-hmm. I was reminded of somebody shared what Brené Brown said about that. I don't remember the person who shared what Brené said, but Brené said something like, be personal without being intimate.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, it's like, don't get into the intimate details. It's TMI, too much information. No one really
yes.
wants to know, and it's embarrassing or uncomfortable, but share yourself. You know,
yes.
You know, I think yeah. women in particular have an inclination sometimes to think with other women that getting into intimate details is how you get close, you know.
Mm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Without consideration that it might make the other person really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like, I really didn't want, like, we're not at that level yet.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
totally.
But to be personable, and you know, and I think that a lot of people we're all kind of figuring this out,
yeah.
because it's like there are things that might be personal to us that I wouldn't imagine anyone would really find interesting or want to know, and yet it can be hard to know for sure, unless, like you said, you get back to listening to your audience, seeing which podcast mm-hmm. episodes get a lot of downloads. And speaking of podcast episodes, I know that we all need to get back to work as well, but I do want to mention.
Must we? No, I'm saying.
I know. I need to get back to my coffee maker is what I need to do.
Yeah, get to your
coffee. I've been staring at your mug like a crazy person. I've been like, how is that?
It's tea time. It's not
time
for that's chai time. So, gosh, what was I going to say?
What were you going to say?
I don't know. What were you going to say?
Podcast up. Speaking of podcast episodes.
Yeah, I heard your, you know, first of all, I love how you start out with, you know, an inspiring, something that's is inspiring you, a positive. What did you call it?
It's the weekly inspiration. So it's what's inspiring me.
Weekly inspiration. And your voice is just so good for
I know.
The podcasting, and you know, all your years of voice training, plus your natural ebullient personality just come across really well on your
Thank
podcast.
You.
And I really enjoyed, like, I'm not into theater, and I did, like, in high school, I did theater, etc. But you know, I didn't, it's not my thing anymore.
Yeah.
So I'm really not typically tuning in to that kind of thing, but I thoroughly enjoyed, like the episode with the one woman show.
Yes. Oh my God. Taylor Dooley. She's amazing. Taylor M. Dooley. Because there is a Taylor Dooley who was Shark Girl in Adventures of whatever, Shark Boy, Laser Girl or whatever her name is. Yeah. But she's Taylor M. Dooley.
Yeah. And just imagining like what it takes to do, you know, so many, I forget how many multiple characters were in the one show.
Like 13 or something like that.
Yeah, she approximated somewhere like 15 plus or something. It was unbelievable.
And yeah, so incredible. so that brings to mind, like, Devani has an interest. Do you know anyone who does voice acting?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Tons. Yeah.
I think, I don't know if we talked about that. No, we were talking about that with Adel. Mm-hmm. We didn't talk about that with Michelle, but that's something Devani kind of has a casual interest in. I don't know, but even in talking about it as a casual interest, you realize how challenging it can be. Like, if you're reading a novel, so for instance, my husband Coleman is an author and he has his second novel coming out, and we've talked about how, you know, we really need to get it read on audio. And it's not as simple as just mm-hmm. reading it yourself, obviously. And when you start getting into, you know, the concept of, even do you hire actors to read it in parts, you know, or if it's one actor trying to read this one book.
You have to get a good voice actor.
You have
actor,
to get a good voice that can modulate and change. Now, you study some of that in theater, and I know that, like, I said, we need to go, and I'm opening a whole other topic. But if you have anything to share on that before we close, that would be great.
So, tips on voice acting?
Yeah, well, just anything that you know, like, yeah, anything that you know about the industry for anyone who might be interested in it, because we don't need to get into, like, you know, where would somebody go, and how does someone work with that, and have you ever done any of that kind of thing?
So I'm actually interested in doing voice acting. I would love to do it because it's also, acting's like easier sister, only in that there's no blocking, there's no costumes, like, you don't have to develop a whole character physically. Yeah. You do have to develop a character mentally and through your mouth. And so that voice acting episode with Taylor is really good because she talks about where the characters live in her mouth.
Yeah.
And that means, like, where she exercises the voices. And so some of them might come in the middle, some of them might be at the tip of her tongue. And that's all, like, an awareness of acting. I just took my first, little digression, but took my first Pilates class like 2 days ago, and the instructor was like, you have this like epic awareness of your body. And I was telling him how theater training gave me that. I was in water polo and swimming and things, and I'd done yoga since I was 15, but like theater, we'd have to do isolations and body exercises every single day, because when you're developing a character physically, let's say the character's hunched over and walks with a little limp, you have to be aware of where the isolations occur. So much like that, voice acting happens in your mouth, and you still are very emotive with your arms because it all comes through the microphone. And so if I'm sitting here like this the whole time, you're going to feel like I'm being stiff. Whereas if I'm like moving, that's why, if you're behind the scenes when I'm recording the Cultured Podcast, my arms are everywhere and I'm like very engaged with my guests, you know, because that's supposed to come out. So as for where you go, the parent company of my podcast network is actually an audiobook company.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So where I record is where everybody in Atlanta records their audiobooks. If you guys want, I can connect you to those guys, because they can definitely give you even more tips. I've never done an audiobook before, but I know it's hard work. It's long work.
It is.
You know, because you're reading an entire book and you're doing takes and things like that. And, you know, even just reading one sentence, like, let's say, okay, I have a baby shower invitation. it can change so vastly just saying, like, please join us for a baby shower. Please join us for a baby shower. Please join us for a baby shower. There's so many ways to do it. It's fun though. It's fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is. So like, if you have aspirations to do it, are you working, have you done anything toward that at this point? Or is it just like on the list?
It's on the list. It's not one of my main areas of focus. I would rather put all my energies behind speaking, because my performance background, I really love performing and I love educating. So I always knew at one point in my life I would be teaching, at probably at the university level. And so that's still something I'd like to do in the future. But I love the idea of mixing my passions for marketing and performance in speaking. So that's where my energy is going to go.
That makes a lot of sense.
And you can always create stories with different characters in them on your
screen. Yeah. I always do anyway. I'm always like even in the last presentation I did, which you can see, you guys can watch it actually, because I did it on Facebook Live and then I posted it on my Facebook, and so you can see it on Facebook, but I like make voices all the time.
Yeah. Well, and Devani does too. That's kind of like where we got off into this, but you know, and so along those lines, you decided you could totally create a podcast, either like, you know, I don't know, a once a month thing or a regular thing that was dedicated to creating characters. You know, that
characters have
their own. Yeah. I love that. It's like the SNL of podcasting, which is also a really good idea.
Yeah, that's right. It's so many fantastic really. Yeah. So, yeah. Well, we need to let you go, but this has been, great.
This was awesome.
Is there anything that we can help you with that you're working on right now?
I mean, you guys just gave me a ton of great ideas, so I appreciate that. I might reach out to you in the future about Facebook ads, because it's not my area of specialty, like running ads on Facebook or even on any social. I've done it for clients and I've done it for me. It's just not my area of interest, frankly. So the fact that you guys do it, I might reach out for that at some point, because
definitely, yeah, it's not, it's like
it's my area of necessity interest.
It's area of necessity, and also what she's currently deep diving into, because we realized that we haven't been, you know, like we've done a lot, we've just scratched the surface kind of in one area, and it's so it's like analytics. It's complex.
And we're selling product, our own product. And so to do that, it's like, you need to know, like, there's some things you just need to know when you are selling a product-based business in today's world.
Yeah.
So, and that's one of them.
So we'll keep you posted. Yeah. We're on that learning curve and definitely glad to share. So
cool. All right. Well, good luck. I'm super excited with everything you guys have going on. Congratulations. Keep up the good work. Keep creating daily.
We will. You too, Michelle. Great to connect. Yeah.
Thank you. Bye, guys.
I'm talking to you. Bye-bye. All right, go ahead.
One driver here.
Okay, one driver. Thanks so much for joining us for the I Create Daily podcast. Please let us know what creatives you would like us to interview and what topics you would be interested in hearing more about.
And if you enjoyed this show, please leave a review on iTunes. We value your feedback. We read all the reviews, and it just helps us get the word out on the I Create Daily podcast. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.